As promised, this morning, we're going to talk about dinosaurs this evening. I think dinosaurs have a place of fascination in everybody, particularly in younger people, and they still hold quite a fascination to me. And as I talk to some of the younger people here, Bowen and Jordan and Ben and Josh, as they were over at the house, and I was asking them about some topics that we could do to go along with the thought of science in the Bible, and the unanimous choice was dinosaurs. And it's very interesting because as I grew up, this was one of the things that kind of really launched the eons of time and the concept of evolution and everything. And it's one of the ways that they kind of snuck it in on us, is starting to talk about dinosaurs. And since, of course, they're extinct and lived so long ago that, you know, in order to explain the existence of dinosaurs, we have to have hundreds of millions of years. And, of course, back then it was hundreds of millions of years. Now it's 4.5 billion years. But, you know, the other thing that we didn't get to this morning is how it always changes with science. You know, all of these dates, all of the methods that they use, all of their facts constantly change. And the Bible remains steadfast and sure. Never changes. The same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And we can rely on that. I had mentioned the fact that the fossil definition had changed, and after services, Bob told me that he thought the definition of theory had changed, and I looked that up this afternoon, and he's right. A theory, when I was in school, was an idea, a concept, and now it's something that has been tested and it generally accepted as fact. So when they talk about, even if they say the theory of evolution now, they are meaning something that has supposedly been substantiated by experimentation and is something that we can rely on as part of the definition of theory. So we see that science constantly changes. That's a big part of the theme of the lessons for this week, is because of science always changing, the funny thing is it eventually catches up with God's word. And that's happened so many times that that's what we're going to be talking about this week, is how whenever there's a difference between science and the Bible, which are we going to rely on? The one that's always the same and has proven hundreds of times to be correct? Or are we going to believe science, who's changing their mind every day and every year? And things get different as we get older. And the whole picture of the universe has changed so much since I was in school. And so it is with dinosaurs. They were introduced to me as fossils. You know, the only way we know about the dinosaurs are because of fossils. So I learned about dinosaurs and believed that all there was about dinosaurs was the fossils that we dug up. And I was told that when we dig up those fossils, you know, it's obvious that they're hundreds of millions of years old. In fact, when you dig up fossils, are you digging up the past? That's what I was always told, you're digging up the past. But you're not digging up the past, you're digging up the present. When do the dinosaur bones exist? They exist now, in the present. They present it to us as if you're digging up the picture. And if you go to the museum, you have the big mural there, and it's got three or four of the dinosaurs fighting, and it's got all the little trilobites and all of that stuff scurrying around on the ground and everything. And if you look at that picture, it's a marvel. You say, wow, they dug all that up. Then you look below it, and they have a map of all the bones. And there's thousands of bones that would be represented in that picture, and they have about 12 of them. All the rest of that is created from their imagination. Next time you go to the Natural History Museum or one of the museums, pay attention to that. And you'll find that they only have a small amount of the bones that they use to tell a story. But when they dig up a bone, does it have a little piece of paper with it that says, "Hi, I'm 100 million years old, and this is where I was and what I was doing and how big I was and all of this"? No. They're digging up a bone that exists now in the present, and they're concocting a story that explains what they want to convey to us. Part of that story is that the earth has to be hundreds of thousands of years old. And as we went through the lesson this morning, hopefully you took away some ammo from that that you can use to refute those ideas of the earth being old, and know that dinosaurs also do not demand that the earth be old. In fact, we'll see some evidences that they fit very well into the young earth idea. But we don't often talk about dinosaurs in the church. And I think this has been a huge mistake. As I said this morning, you know, we were taught more or less just believe that the earth was created in 6 days and believe that God created all, and that's enough. And I'm firmly convinced that my dad thought that it was such foolishness that it would go away. And I imagine that a lot of that generation thought the same thing when they started hearing, "Who's going to believe that Big Bang theory? Who's going to believe that a monkey turns into a man? I mean, it's obvious. When a prince kisses a frog, or when a princess kisses a frog, it turns into a prince. That's a fairy tale. If it takes millions of years, it's science." You know, that's foolishness. And I'm sure that that generation thought that that would come to nothing. Instead, it now permeates our education system. And it's constantly beaten into the heads of our kids, and if we're not careful, ourselves as well. So we are going to talk about dinosaurs. I think it's great if our young people know the truth about dinosaurs, and they're able to talk about them with people and show them the concept that just because it's a dinosaur and just because we think it's extinct today doesn't mean that it had to be hundreds of millions of years old. So what is a dinosaur? The definition of a dinosaur in the American Heritage Dictionary is any of a group, dinosauria, of extinct, often very large, chiefly terrestrial, carnivorous, or herbivorous reptiles of the Mesozoic era. Already I have a few points with that definition. But that's kind of the definition that we have of dinosaurs today. And we're going to look at that definition. Extinct. Any group of extinct. How do we know that dinosaurs are extinct? Well, we at least know they're not very common because we don't see them very often. How would you know that dinosaurs, anything that falls into that order, how would you know that they're extinct? Well, there's a saying that exists in science, whenever it suits them, that you can't prove a negative. So when they try to prove that a dinosaur is extinct, what they're saying is that no dinosaur exists anywhere. So how do you prove that? The only way that you could prove that dinosaurs are extinct is to have somebody watching every point on the earth, all being 100% perfect observers at all times, paying perfect attention, all saying, "There's no dinosaur here." Actually, as we'll see, there's actually quite a bit of evidence that perhaps all the dinosaurs are not extinct. And have you noticed that about every 4 or 5 years, they'll find something that usually comes out of the ocean that they thought was extinct for 10, 20, 30, 50, 100,000, a million years. So when they find something that they thought was extinct for a million years, And because it existed a million years ago, we know the earth has to be old. When they dig it up, what do they say? Well, maybe we need to rethink all that. No, they just call it a living fossil. And you see, when you can change your mind like that, you can never prove to these people that the Bible is inerrant and the Bible is true. Because they're just going to keep changing the playing field. And that's what constantly happens. So, if they found a large dinosaur alive somewhere, do you think it would make them change their mind about evolution and eons of time that the world was here? No. Well, we found another living fossil. And that's really sad, because our youth does not get that picture of science. They're taught to trust science. They're taught that they use infallible methods of testing and of observation to come to conclusions. And yet we find out that many of the conclusions are not tested at all, and they are not valid. So probably it is safe to say, for the most part, dinosaurs are extinct. But perhaps they're not all extinct. And using the scientific method, it would be very difficult to prove that they are extinct. But if you think, I have some of the picture here in the middle on the bottom is a supposed picture of the Loch Ness Monster. We've all heard of that. Possibly a hoax, possibly nothing there. There's been a lot of smoke to not be any fire there. It seems that there might be something there. The answer would be a plesiosaur or something like that. If in fact the descriptions that go back for hundreds of years, sightings that have been seen of this monster, so-called, in the water there. Could it still exist? Well, I believe it could exist. I've read stories of them going down in the water, and the water, when you get deep, gets so murky that you can't see very far in front of you. And they have picked up sonar things of big objects down there. So there's a lot of confusion over whether or not there could be something in the Loch. Could it be a dinosaur? Yeah. Could it be something else? Yeah, sure it could. Can we know 100% certain that dinosaurs are extinct? Probably not. The picture down on the bottom to the left is of an artist's rendition of Mikilimimbi that lives in the Congo, supposedly. And this is a fascinating story because, again, for years and years and years, there's been reportings of what is described as a sauropod dinosaur that still lives in the Congo. In the area where it is, the government describes as 80% unexplored. And I've read of several missions that went there to try to get pictures of this dinosaur. And the difficulty of the expedition usually winds up turning them back. But there are several people who have reported seeing footprints, who have reported hearing it, and the natives who are guiding them say, there's Mikilimimbi, you know. So, and many of the natives there that see it. And so they said, well, what does it look like? And they drew a picture of it, and it looks like a sauropod dinosaur. So they show them a picture of what we think a sauropod dinosaur looks like, and they say, yeah, that's Mikilimimbi. We've seen it. The last time it was saw was in 1992. That it's been reported as being seen. And back in the 80s, there were a couple missions where they saw a sign of it and lives mostly in the water. So there's many examples. There's a video that just came out last year of what could be a plesiosaur that was recorded in Vancouver, Canada. There's many sightings of pterodactyls that are reported in a lot of different places. And then they found fossils of those creatures, and they found bones that were not fossilized of these creatures in the same areas where they're reported. As a matter of fact, in Washington State, Olympic National Park I read that the sightings of pterodactyls have become almost commonplace there. And it's amazing that we hear so very little about it. But there's many, many reports of seeing a creature that's like a pterodactyl in Washington State, here in the United States. There have also been reports in Arizona, in Texas, in the United States, and several reports from over in Europe about pterodactyls. Nobody has been by film or video or anything like that that presents 100% proof on these things. Is it possible that they're hoaxes? Sure it is. As I said, there's an awful lot of smoke to be no fire at all. It would seem that with that many reports that people are seeing something, and it's different than what they're normally seeing. And why is it that when we hear that, okay, this guy up in Washington State said he saw a pterodactyl. What's our first thought? What's wrong with that guy? Why? Why is that the first thing that goes through our mind? Because we have been told pterodactyls are extinct. So when we automatically think that it would be impossible for that to be real, that's part of how we've been conditioned. We've been conditioned to think that if anybody reports seeing anything that resembles a dinosaur, there's something wrong with that person. Not that, wow, we could be living beside the dinosaur still. And so again, it's those blinders that are put on. It's the pre-assumptions that we lay out as we think about the evidence around about us. And if we have the wrong blinders on, you know, a dinosaur could walk right in the aisle here and we wouldn't see it for what it is. Because we're told it's impossible. So we need to be careful about assumptions that we make. We need to be careful about the condition that we allow our mind to get in as we're constantly subjected to these things. So a good definition of dinosaur would probably not say that they're definitely extinct. That definition also says that they're often large. However, most of the dinosaurs are not large. Many of the dinosaurs are very small, many the size of chickens. The average size of a dinosaur is probably something like a sheep or something like that. There's only a handful of the really big dinosaurs. They're the ones that capture our imagination. They're the ones that create the excitement. But most of the dinosaurs were not big like that. Most of them were smaller. And that answers a lot of questions too. But I found it very interesting that in the definition of dinosaurs, they're often large. I would say sometimes large, often small, often very resemblant of some of the reptiles that still exist today. And of course, it says of the Mesozoic era, which is a long time ago. I forget exactly how many millions of years. But again, this is given in a dictionary as fact. This is when dinosaurs existed. They didn't exist before that, and they didn't exist after that. They only existed then. That's a critical statement for them to be able to make and to convince us that it's correct, because then we have to have millions of years. We have to have time for the dinosaur to have evolved, lived through its life cycle, died out, and become fossils. So if they only existed at this time period, then they can sell them hundreds of millions of years. I think the definition should be something like this. The word dinosaur means terrible lizard. I think it should be terrible lizards that are thought to be extinct that once lived all over the earth. Dinosaur fossils have been found on every continent. So at some point, they've lived all over the earth. And I say terrible lizards simply because that's the word that was chosen to describe them when they were named. They were named in 1842. That's when the name dinosaur came to be. Because people have said, well, if there were dinosaurs, why are they not mentioned in the Bible? Why is the word dinosaur not mentioned in the Bible? The word dinosaur, King James Version was translated 1611. It was 230 years before the word dinosaur was ever made up. And it was made up to describe what they were digging up. And when they saw them, they thought, wow, these are reptilian-looking creatures. They look like lizards. They're ferocious. And so they coined the phrase dinosaur, terrible lizard. I think the Bible does talk about dinosaurs. Very likely, Behemoth was a dinosaur in Job chapter 40, verses 15 through 24. Behold now Behemoth, which I have made with thee. He eateth grass as an ox. Lo now his strength is in his loins, and his force is in the navel of his belly. He moveth his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his stones are wrapped together. His bones are as strong as pieces of brass. His bones are like bars of iron. He is the chief of the ways of God. He that made him can make his sword to approach unto him. Surely the mountains bring him forth food, where all the beasts of the field play. He lieth under the shady trees in the covert of the reed and fens. The shady trees cover him with their shadow. The willows of the brook compass him about. Behold, he drinketh up a river and hasteth not. He trusteth that he can draw up Jordan into his mouth. He taketh it with his eyes. His nose pierceth through snares. Why do you think in the first verse he would have said, which I made with thee? You know, there's some things that are in the Bible that, you know, you just discover these at some point and you say, why would it say, I made him with thee, when we live in a time now where everybody says that no dinosaurs lived beside man? And so he describes what is probably a dinosaur here, and he says, I made it with thee, both made on the sixth day of creation. And some of the descriptions of Behemoth, if you look in the margins of your Bible somewhere, it is likely to say an elephant or a hippopotamus. Those are big animals. You know, he talks about the chief of the ways of God. We have an elephant and a hippo. They're both impressive animals. Some animals I like to see when I go to the zoo, they're big and powerful animals. But neither one of them has that dominating characteristic that I think I'm reading about when I read about Behemoth, the chief of the ways of God. His nose rippeth through snares. You can't catch, you can't tame, you can't control Behemoth. We know that many armies tamed the elephants and used them in combat. Somehow I don't think Behemoth would have been tamed and used in a battle. And then my favorite characteristic is he swings his tail like a cedar. Pardon the pictures, but we have the tail of an elephant and the tail of a hippo there, and I don't see it. He swings his tail like a cedar. We see little bitty small whiskey tails. If we look at Brachiosaurus, the largest of the dinosaurs, that's what I imagine when I read about Behemoth, the chief of the ways of God. He swings his tail like a cedar tree. Very large and powerful tail. And, you know, can you imagine catching and taming that? Even though it was herbivorous and not carnivorous. But it's huge. And the magnitude of it seems to be consistent with what we're reading. You know, he trusts that he can draw up the Jordan into his mouth. You know, again, an elephant can hold quite a bit of water. I've seen him do it, a big bucket full. But you know, that's about it. You know, behemoth, can you imagine the amount of water it could draw up if it wanted to? So I don't think behemoth was an elephant or a hippo. I think it's something that we haven't seen. And I think very likely it was something closely related to the Brachiosaurus, the largest animal that we've discovered that lived. The chief of the ways of God. Usually when he talks about the chief of something, it's the biggest or the best or the strongest or something. And none of those terms seem to apply to me to an elephant or a hippopotamus. It's something bigger and grander than that. In the next chapter, he talks about Leviathan. For lack of time, I'm not going to read all of this. But in the first verse, it says, can you draw out Leviathan with a hook, or his tongue with a cord which thou lettest down? Can you put a hook in his nose, or bore through his jaw with a thorn? Will he make a covenant with thee? Can you deal with him? Can you, you know, again, I think that's kind of like, can you tame him? You know, can you make a covenant with him? Lay your hand upon him and remember the battle and do no more. None is so fierce that dares stir him up. And of course, God used that to say, who then is able to stand before me? I will not, who can come to him with his double bridle? Who can open the doors of his face? His teeth are terrible round about. His scales are his pride, shut up together as with a close seal. One is so near to the other that no air can come between them. They are joined one to another. They stick together that they cannot be sundered. Out of his mouth goes burning lamps, and sparks of fire leap out. Out of his nostrils goeth smoke, as out of a seething pot or cauldron. His breath kindleth coals, and a flame goes out of his mouth. And it goes on, and again, if you look in the margin of your Bible, it'll say an alligator or a crocodile. I'm sorry. You know, I watch Swamp Wars or whatever it's called. And you know, these guys in one night catch 21 alligators. This is something you wouldn't want to mess with. This is something that you wouldn't stand in a boat and reach over and try to pull him up into the boat. And it says that. It says you wouldn't mess with him. Leviathan actually appears several other places in the Bible as well. Psalm 74, 12 through 15 says, thou didst divide the sea by thy strength. Thou breakest the heads of the dragons in the water. Thou breakest the heads of the Leviathan in pieces. And gave him to me be meat to the people inhabiting the wilderness. Psalms 104, 25, and 26. So is this great and wide sea, wherein all are things creeping innumerable, both small and great beasts. There go the ships. There is that Leviathan, whom thou have made to play therein. I find that interesting because it talks about the small and the large, and it talks about the great beasts, and then there's a whole other category. There's Leviathan. So again, this is something that is beyond our familiarity, I believe. Isaiah 27 and 1 says, in that day the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. I think that verse is important for two reasons. One is, it talks about Leviathan the crooked serpent and equates it to slaying the dragon that is in the sea. And we're going to come back to that thought in a little bit. But it's very interesting that those words are both used to describe Leviathan here. We read other places about the beast, the beasts on land, the beasts in the sea. We read other places about the dragon and serpents. And so we have something that is a fearful and mighty creature that combines these characteristics. And whereas with Behemoth, I think what we read about was the vastness of it, how it was huge. Here we read about something that is just fierce and something that would strike fear into our hearts. There are many legends about Leviathan. I would encourage you to go read those because we don't have time to get into all that. But there's legends that say that when God created Leviathan, he then killed the female so they could not produce because it was so fierce. Not that I believe that, but this is the esteem that when people knew what Leviathan was, this is in history books, old history books that it's written. It's in the Talmud, the Israel's books. It was a mightily feared creature when people knew what it was. And the fact that they knew what it was is what I'm really focusing on in the lesson tonight. People lived beside this creature. They knew and understood what it was. When we come across this today, we don't know what it is. And when skeptics look at this, they say, well, it's a crocodile or it's an alligator. I submit that you can read that and it is not a crocodile or an alligator. And it's very obvious that it's not. So Leviathan, a crocodile or an alligator? No. Perhaps this is a skeleton of a recently found new species of marine dinosaur called a Kronosaurus. And it's huge. This gives you an idea. This is a representation of it outside of a museum. We see a man standing here. And now that's something that would strike fear into your hearts. That's something that would be a little more than walking up on an alligator. The interesting thing about this skeleton is that they found cavity passages that went down into the trachea in this species that they had never found before. And of course, some people think that that could be that it could gather gases up from its digestive system and literally could have been possible for it to breathe fire, just as the scripture says. Of course, a lot of people read that and think, well, that's figurative. You know, we know that no animal breathes fire. Do we know that no animal ever breathed fire? Why? Why are we convinced that no animal could have ever breathed fire? We think it's impossible, don't we? Well, have you ever seen the bombardier beetle? The bombardier beetle is a beetle. I wanted to put a little video in here, but I couldn't get it to work right. They have a little 2-minute video that you can see. The bombardier beetle produces two chemicals that it mixes together, and it heats up to over 200 degrees, and then it ejects that out to use as a defense mechanism. If an animal that lives today can do that, why do we think it would be impossible for Leviathan to literally breathe fire? And you think about that, and then you think about all the dragon legends and everything that exists in every culture from the beginning of time. And suddenly, the whole picture starts coming into focus. You take the facts that people tend to embellish a little bit, and that fish that is this big sometimes gets that big. And maybe a spark becomes a flame, and maybe a little bit of smoke becomes a bonfire. But if you take into account the likelihood of people who embellish a story, especially a warrior that went out and slayed this dragon, you should have seen the fire this thing was breathing. It's very easy to imagine dinosaurs, especially one that could possibly have had done something like that. You can just imagine that becoming legend and being passed down, embellished, getting a little bit wilder every time it's told until you have a full-fledged dragon legend that existed all over the face of the earth. Every civilization has stories about dragons. Other names in the Bible that could very well refer to dinosaurs also. Isaiah 30 and 6 talks about the fiery flying serpent. And I don't think it's a far stretch to think that the pterodons would fit that description. Dragon appears 18 times in the scripture. As we've seen, one of them is used also to describe Leviathan, which, by the way, it also says breathe fire, which I find very interesting when you combine it with the dragon legends and all the things that have, the stories that have been handed down over the years. And sea monsters. Lamentations 4 and 3 says, even the sea monsters draw out the beast. They give suck to the young ones. The daughter of my people has become cruel like the ostriches in the wilderness. Again, it's things that we don't know exactly what are, but they could be things that we don't see every day. It's very easy to imagine something that existed at the time of Job, especially, that doesn't exist now, that God told him about, that was recorded for us to read about. We no longer understand it. That doesn't mean that people never understood it. And it's important for us to realize that. Did dinosaurs live beside men? Exodus 20 and 11, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven, the earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Yes, man lived beside the dinosaur. There is no question, if you believe the Bible, that man lived beside the dinosaur. The only other explanation is that dinosaurs never did exist at all. There are some who believe that they were created extinct, which I can't say is impossible. But God could have created the fossil record. However, we're going to see a little bit more evidence. But both, I put day 5 there, that's a typo. Both were created on day 6, actually. And on the seventh day, God rested. Let's look at some evidence of dinosaurs living beside men. I'll try to hurry through this. I apologize for taking long. But here's some cave paintings. There are many more. I thought these had the best chance of showing up on the screen here. A lot of these are faded, and a lot of them they give another version that's enhanced where they outline the picture. But hopefully you can see in the lower left, there's what appears to be a dinosaur, and up here in the upper right, a very simple diagram of what could well be a dinosaur. I can't think of what else it would be standing on its hind legs like that and with the big tail. So these are pictures that were drawn relatively recent in time. And so we have to ask ourselves, what were people drawing if they hadn't seen these things? And then, can it be a coincidence that then we dig up bones and occasionally we can find enough of them to assemble an animal and see that it looks like that? You know, it'd be awful low odds that they would draw something that would actually have existed, and they drew it out of their imagination. So I believe they obviously had to see those things in order to draw them. This is one of the most remarkable things. This is in a Cambodian temple in 11 that was built around 1100 BC or AD. AD. There's big columns like this, And each of these circles here has a different animal in it. And a lot of them are animals that we can recognize. There's a monkey in there. There's a goat in there. There's sheep in there. There's a lot of different animals that you can recognize. Right here looks like a stegosaurus. And how would they know to put a stegosaurus in there, along with all of the animals that they saw day in and day out? Well, not far from this palace is the biggest deposit of stegosaurus fossils that's ever been found. Coincidence? I don't think so. These people saw the stegosaurus. They knew what it was. Now, science answer was, that don't really look like a stegosaurus. I mean, I actually saw this done, and they put a picture of a stegosaurus up next to it, and then they put this up there and said, see, the stegosaurus is longer and leaner. And, you know, if you saw the other pictures of the goat and the sheep, you would understand, because they look about as much as a goat or sheep as this does a stegosaurus. It's a carving. So, I think it was ICR again that was on this project. They took pictures of this and they took it into classrooms. And they asked elementary students what this was. 100% of them said it was a stegosaurus. The scientist said, no, that doesn't really look like a stegosaurus. But all you got to do is show it to a kid and they'll tell you it's a stegosaurus. And if you look at the toys, another thing that's out there on the internet is a toy that's made of a stegosaurus. If you set it right beside that, it looks identical to it. Yeah, it don't look like a real stegosaurus, but this is a close representation to what a stegosaurus looks like. Enough so that you can show it to 6 and 8 and 9-year-old kids, and 100% of them will say that's a stegosaurus. None of them are going to say, well, that don't look like a stegosaurus. So these people live beside the stegosaurus. I think the evidence is conclusive that those people saw the stegosaurus. And they saw it enough that it was one of the animals they carved into these columns. These are figurines. Maybe toys, maybe knickknacks, or whatever, but they are made from about 300 AD. Or that's when they believe they were from, with the other stuff that they found them in. They found them in with pottery and things like that. And they found these little caricatures of dinosaurs. Perhaps their kids played with dinosaur toys even way back then, too. And that's amazing for me to think of back then. That, you know, they made figurines of dinosaurs when there wasn't even a word. You know, dinosaur wasn't even a word. They hadn't even dug up fossils. But somehow these people knew to make these models of these animals. And perhaps their kids were just as fascinated by dinosaurs back then as ours are today. These show up a little better on my screen. I apologize for that. But again, I think it's very convincing evidence that these people saw these creatures. You know, some people say, well, maybe they saw the bones. Well, how did they see the bones? You know, these are things that, you know, our technology found and dug up, you know, hundreds and thousands of years later. I doubt they saw the bones. Is that possible? Yeah, that's possible. But it's not very likely that they got their representations of these animals strictly from digging up the fossils. Because actually, when they first dug up the fossils, it was pretty earth-shattering news. And there were a lot of people that questioned the veracity of a creature like this. Why? Because they couldn't read about it in the Bible. And it caused a lot of people angst. They said, well, you know, I don't know anything about it. And it was scary for them. And rather than think about Behemoth and Leviathan and fiery serpents and dragons and those things that are mentioned in the Bible, you know, they would rather push back and say, no, I don't think that's real. Well, I think there's enough evidence to say that they are real. I think there's enough evidence to say that people did live beside the dinosaur. And there are just many more examples of this. There's all kinds of pottery that has dinosaurs on them. There's different ornamental attire that has carvings of dinosaurs in them. All kinds of things. So evidently, people's fascination with dinosaurs goes back quite some time. And you can imagine that with, you know, they always, almost always depict the large and the fierce dinosaurs too. And we've already mentioned the fact that most of the dinosaurs were little. That it's not those that capture our imaginations. It's the very ones that we're familiar with that we see these representations of. So what happened to the dinosaurs? They died. You know, I felt real good when I figured that out. But, you know, and that makes you laugh, and you think, okay, wow, what happened to the dinosaurs? They died. Did I really come here to learn that? But it's not as remarkable as it sounds, because there are species that are going extinct all the time. It's not a surprise to think that animals die. It's pretty unusual to lose a whole order of animals like this. But we have lost 55,000 species that have gone extinct since 1800, is what they believe. Now, species is an interesting word, because I read that there's 350 species of beetle. So when we talk about 55,000 species, we probably wouldn't miss very many of those 55,000. In fact, I think I read that there's 60-something of animals that we would probably recognize and know that went extinct since 1800. But you may remember how we went kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. When it comes to dinosaurs, the kingdom would be animal, the phylum would be vertebrae. They have a different word for that. I'm trying to simplify it in a way I can remember it. The class would be reptile, and the order would be dinosaur. And actually, there's a super order that would be dinosaur, and then suborders that would be, one of my words got cut off there. But one of those deals with the land and sea animals, the Saurischia and the Ornith, whatever. That deals with, I can't say it, even it's up there, so I'm kind of glad it's hidden anyway. But that deals with the flying dinosaurs, like the pterodons and those kind of things. And there's many others of those too. The Ornith you might recognize from bird. But I think that's Latin for bird. But this would be an unusual extinction, in that an order would become pretty much extinct. However, even by scientists, zoologists, or whoever it is that determine this kind of thing, there are several people there are several animals that still exist in this hierarchy, especially of the birds. There's actually several birds that they say are still in this order that included dinosaurs today. And there are a few that are still in the other category as well, many of them being marine animals. Now, that's interesting because, you know, the ones that are in the sea are the ones that we can't see every day. And that's the ones that tend to still exist today. And that's what they usually, when they find the living fossils, they usually fall into one of these orders. So it's not uncommon at all for animals to die out, for species to die out. It's a little unusual for an order like dinosaur to die out. And most of this has obviously died out. Why did they die? And I believe that it's the same reason that species die out today. The number one reason for dying is loss of habitat. And imagine the habitat that it took for some of the dinosaurs to exist in. And remember, we talked this morning about the world being much different before the flood. I'm going to finish here in just a second. But we talk about the world being very different before the flood and after the flood. And with the canopy, the water vapor barrier over the earth allowed this lush vegetation to flourish, which was great food for the big dinosaurs. But can you imagine how much the Brachiosaurus and the Tyrannosaurus and those animals that are huge like that would eat? And I believe when you had the flood, if you think about it, much of the vegetation would be destroyed by that flood, laying down sediments upon top of sediments. And probably it wiped out most of the vegetation on the earth, and it had to come back from the seeds that were buried by the flood in the ground. And so you wouldn't have those massive rainforests that existed in a different climate for those dinosaurs to eat. And so it actually makes quite a bit of sense that they would have had a big fight on their hands, not only to exist, but to replenish themselves to the orders that they once had. So I think when you look at it in that way, you can see that it actually almost makes sense that the dinosaurs didn't survive. Brandy asked me a real good question. She said, well, why would he save them on the ark if they weren't going to make it anyway? So, well, you're going to have to ask him that one day. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, it brings up a good question of, you know, one of the big things that then comes up is, well, you know, were the dinosaurs on the ark? If they live beside men as late as 1100, like you say, you know, were the dinosaurs on the ark? Yeah, the dinosaurs were on the ark. Well, how would you fit them on there? Remember, not all the dinosaurs were big. There was only a handful of big dinosaurs. And remember this, reptiles never stop growing. Okay, an alligator never stops growing. If it lives 100 years, it continues to get bigger. They don't reach full size like mammals do. Now, imagine that before the flood, people were living 1,000 years. Imagine terrible lizards, because their lifespans are actually comparable with ours, and in some cases longer than ours. The turtles, the Komodo dragon, they all have long lifespans. Alligators even have long lifespans. So imagine that they were living 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 years before the flood and never stopped growing. So that could explain why some of those were very big. I actually suspect that there was very few different species of dinosaurs, that a lot of the dinosaurs were ones who didn't grow for 1,200 or 1,500 years, but only a normal lifespan. And so that was the smaller dinosaurs. The larger dinosaurs were the pre-flood dinosaurs that lived many, many years, perhaps 1,000 or 1,500 years, and continued to grow. So when we see the Apatosaurus and the sauropod and the Brachiosaurus, they look the same, but three different sizes. Well, I suspect they were the same. And maybe that was the only one that needed to be saved on the ark. So it'd be easy to fit them in there. You wouldn't have to fit 10,000 dinosaurs on the ark, just a handful of species of dinosaur. And you wouldn't take the one that's already 1,000 years old. You would take a young adult that would be much smaller. It only makes sense because you want to procreate and replenish the earth. So you would take a young adult specimen that would not be fully grown like that. So it's easy to make sense out of it when you just look at the biology of it and you look at applying a little bit of common sense to it, you can see that it'd be very easy to have the dinosaurs on the ark and the fact that they died out because they lost their habitat as a result of the flood and they were unable to thrive in it the same way they did before. However, remember there's much evidence that they're not completely extinct today, that there are a few specimens that exist here and there. And it'd be exciting if they ever captured information that proved that. But why do we need to study this anyway? And there's probably things that we could study that may be more profitable to us, But I think this is very important to us. And our young people that are constantly berated with the thoughts that, how could you have a dinosaur if you don't have millions of years? They need to understand that you don't need millions of years to have a dinosaur. You can't even prove that dinosaurs are extinct, let alone that they lived 120 million years ago. So it's important for us to examine these things and do it from a point of view that is scientific-based, but also shows that the Bible is true in these things. And that when God spoke to Job about these creatures, he was probably talking about creatures that are dinosaurs that we don't really think about that way, because we've been told all our lives that dinosaurs were extinct, so Job couldn't have saw them. But all of those references to dragons, fiery beasts, and sea monsters, and all of that probably relate to these animals that live beside men. And we see it all the time with the carvings and the paintings and pictures that people have made, descriptions that they've given. It's obvious to me that man lived beside the dinosaur, that God created the heavens and earth and all that in them is. And on day six, he made man and the dinosaur, and they lived beside each other. Now, that doesn't mean they lived in the same neighborhood. I probably wouldn't want to live in the same neighborhood as T-Rex. But we see that all the time, too. They go to their spot, and we go to our spot. And that happens all the time. You don't see lions and tigers in downtown. You know, they find their habitat. And what makes them go extinct is they lose that habitat. And that's what happened with the dinosaurs, too. So hopefully this gives you confidence in talking about these things. That's what I want you to take away from. When people start telling you about dinosaurs and millions of years ago, well, I don't think dinosaurs were thousands of years old. In fact, I think there's a lot of reports of dinosaurs in the 1400s. They were called dragons because dinosaur didn't even exist until 1842. You need to be able to answer like that. And let me tell you, it puts people back on their heels because they've never heard thinking like that. They've been inundated with hundreds of millions of years ago. And so I hope it gives us confidence to stand up and to believe what's right. And to know that we're believing what's right because we're believing what the Bible says and not what science is teaching that changes every little bit. All of this is because God is so wonderful and he's awesome. The creation that he gave us is beyond our imagination. He spoke it into existence. Gave us everything that we need and just a wonderful world in which to live that includes our pets that we like and we cherish and the dinosaurs as well. And you can imagine with the greatness of the world that he's created for us, the home in heaven that he's created for us. Can you imagine the glory of that and how wonderful that'll be if one day we live faithful to him and we can go home and live with him throughout eternity. And that's really the bottom line. We need to believe that he is, and we need to believe that his gospel is truth. And if you've never obeyed that, you need to take this opportunity to do that. You need to hear the word, believe it, to repent of your past sins, change your will to do his will. You need to be willing to publicly confess your belief in him as the Son of God. Be baptized for the remission of your sins, to rise and walk in newness of life, live faithful unto death. And you can have hope of that wonderful creation that's waiting on the other side for us. If you're subject, won't you come while we stand and sing?